Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome to the 12th podcast from Market Musings, and we're excited to welcome our next guest, whose business operates in a bit of a different sector to what we often talk about here on Market Musings, and that's the technology sector, specifically digital publications. So the company in question is called Digital Box, and their ticker on the AIM is DBOX, D-Box, and they own Entertainment Daily and the Daily Mash. And they refer to themselves as the mobile-first digital media business. So welcome to CEO James Carter. Hello.
Hello, Mark. Thank you very much for inviting me to join you on Market Musings.
Yes.
Much appreciated.
Absolutely, absolutely. You're very welcome. So, James, I mean, what does mobile-first digital media really mean?
Well, we're all familiar, obviously, with penetration of mobile devices in our lives on many levels and through many generations now. You know, my mother uses a smartphone and my kids obviously use smartphones, and you know, that has changed behavior in everyone's lives. So it's the primary device which people consume the internet these days. And when we set about building our business, we felt we were looking at sectors of the market that were doing well, sectors of the market that were struggling to make sense, and particularly in the news media market. Then we looked at things like the Mail Online as an example, or the Sun. And a lot of these publishers were struggling to make money out of a mobile journey with their digital operations. And so my feeling very much at that time is, well, if you can make sense of a mobile journey, you're going to be so far ahead of the game that you're going to have a business that will really accelerate quite quickly, because everyone else is trying to kind of re-engineer its business from transformation from desktop consumption to mobile consumption. So, you know, for most publishers, there's been a transitional challenge over the last 10 years to move quite possibly from print to digital, and that being desktop in the first place. Desktop has started to make money in the last couple of years. And they're then challenged with another transformation, which is moving desktop to mobile. And so I felt very much if we could deliver a successful execution on mobile, then we would be very well advantaged. And because of that, we've moved quite quickly since our formation, really.
So you've effectively built from the ground up then a mobile, specific for mobile devices?
Yes, we built the Digital Box existed before I got involved, but primarily it was an ad tech business. It had a platform called Content Click, which was a content discovery widget that sat on various websites. So you may be familiar with companies like Outbrain or Taboola, where you get to the end of an article on the Telegraph or somewhere like that, and it says you may also be interested in. So one of those widgets. So this was built up by Martin Higginson, who's our NED, one of our NEDs at the moment, but he was the founder of Digital Box, and he built Content Click and sold it to a US business called Rev Content, and was really pondering what he should do with what was left. And over the time which they owned Content Click, then they did set up some domains, some website domains that serviced some of the excess inventory that they needed to deliver to some of the advertisers that plugged into their platform. So they had a variety of brands. I think we probably own about 100 web domains at the moment. And so he felt there was an opportunity to create a media business out of the assets that were left after the sale of Content Click to Rev Content. So I got involved then, really, to build media business.
Okay, and that's where the Daily Mash was, and Entertainment Daily was born, was it?
Daily Mash not, but Entertainment Daily yes.
Okay.
So we tested essentially three sectors of the market. We tested entertainment news with Entertainment Daily. We tested mail interests with Fella.com. And we tested another sector, which was women's well-being through a site called Eat Live Glow. And it was Entertainment Daily where we got most traction most quickly. So gave that our absolute focus to grow it.
So obviously, James, you know, looking at your profile, you've been involved in the media business, particularly media print, for a long time. And I was looking at the list of magazines that you've been involved with, and obviously the first one that stuck out was FHM.
Yeah,
it's probably a bit before. Mark's quite young, by the way. He's in his early 30s, so he might struggle to remember some of these magazines. But can you take us back maybe in your sort of business journey?
Yeah, I mean, I can go all the way back to the very beginning, if you like, which...
Listen, we've got all day.
Okay. I mean, I suppose my first dalliance, I suppose, with the media industry was, and it's really nothing to do with media production, but I grew up in quite a small village, quite a remote village in Suffolk. It was about 200 people or 250 people in the village, I think. And it struck me and my neighbour, who, you know, we used to live sort of fairly feral lifestyles of damming rivers and streams and creating havoc and stuff like that, and sort of roaming around in a rural countryside without too much to do. But it struck us both that there was an opportunity in the village, because there was no newspaper delivery at all. We felt if we could buy the newspapers at basically wholesale prices, we could set up a newspaper delivery service in the village. And it wasn't on a daily basis, but we did the Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
We made quite a lot of money, actually, in those days. It was fairly significant. And people used to tip us because they were so pleased to have a delivery service. And we built up quite a decent round every Sunday. It's a long time ago, but I think we were probably making about 50 quid a week, which was fairly decent.
That's good. I had a paper run Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I only made £6 a week.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit older than you, James, or you just had some good tippers.
Well, it's the Sunday papers that had the premium prices, you see. That's the people weren't afraid of tipping £1 or something like that. I can't remember, or 50p or whatever at the time. So, there was quite a lot of cash because of the premium pricing on the Sunday papers.
Yeah.
But anyway, that wasn't really anything to do with media. It was just sort of, I suppose, early sort of entrepreneurial appetite. But I went to what's grandly now called the University of Westminster after school, and studied business studies there, and got quite interested in sort of club related magazines. And a friend of mine, Nick Clark, had a magazine called The Buzz that he was publishing, and it was a sort of club lifestyle magazine for the people that hung out in Soho and the West End, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of my brother-in-law got involved in publishing that, actually, and it started to spike my interest in men's lifestyle magazines and the medium that was emerging, and things that launched as I came out of the University of Westminster were things like Arena came onto the newsstands, which I think was the first men's magazine on the newsstands in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
But it postdated the emergence of another magazine, which was called For Him magazine, which was produced by a company called Tavale, which was an independent marketing business. And they produced this basically a men's fashion-based magazine that would be distributed through men's fashion stores in the UK direct to the consumer. To be used as a kind of gift with purchase, really. So if you went in and bought a jacket, it was, you know, would you like a magazine to take away with that? Anyway, so this men's market for magazines gradually emerged. And then I suppose towards the late 80s became recognized chiefly because Condé Nast entered into the sector with the launch of GQ. Mm-hmm. That really led to GQ went onto the newsstands, I think, in spring 89. And that also led to For Him magazine, as it was called then, going onto the newsstand at the same period. And I was sort of monitoring what was going on, and then applied for a job. After I left University of Westminster and got a job on For Him magazine before it was rebranded FHM. So that was really my entry into the media market.
I suppose then what you're trying to do with D-Box is create the same model, but online, so to speak. Is that a kind of fair assumption?
Well, I think we clearly like to generate the same success. Our chairman, Sir Robin Miller, was the man behind EMAP at the time, who took it to be a FTSE 100 company and hugely successful and very well recognised throughout the media industry, not just in the UK but around the world. We do think there's an opportunity to scale our business quickly if we can get the right investment. There are lots of opportunities available in the market to acquire and transform towards our model. So we think we can move quite quickly. We're viewing sort of targets all the time. And I think in the current climate, it's probably only going to increase the number of opportunities that exist.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that in the presentation, you sort of buy and build strategy. There must be a lot of distressed assets just now. I mean, a lot of companies must be on their knees.
Well, if they're not now, then in 2 months' time, it's, you know, it's really going to sort them out. I mean, you know, I don't mean that in an aggressive way, but it's, you know,
survival of the fittest, James. That's the law of the jungle at times like this.
I'm afraid it is. Yes.
Yeah, and obviously, you guys are pretty well positioned. I mean, from your latest RNS, you've got approximately £1 million. Cash in the bank, which is not to be sniffed at in these times.
Yeah, we've got £1 million in the bank. I think the important thing for us is because we've been looking across the market and looking at ITV, for example, whose value has been halved, I think, in the past few months. Yeah, chiefly because obviously ad revenues are going to drop. I'm not entirely sure what their margins are, but it could well wipe out all their all of their profit or turn them into a negative position. The fortunate thing is about our business is we've managed to drive it with a margin that is sufficient at about 24% to give us headroom in a difficult marketplace. So how long this sort of struggle takes for us to normalize the UK economy again shall be seen. But if it's, 3 to 6 months, we're well placed to deal with that because, we should be making money through that period and not dipping into that £1 million.
And all your revenues is basically from the sale of advertising on these platforms. Is that your main source of income, just really advertising? Is there any other
sources of income? Yeah. We have some income from licensing of the Daily Mash content to the BBC. Mm-hmm. So the Mash Report TV show that is on this evening at 10 o'clock and is on for a 6-week run. We receive license money for that, but chiefly we're advertising driven. So, you know, our business revolves around our ability to engage consumers in what we call a push media model. So having the ability to maximize engagement and put the right content in front of the right person at the right time, mm-hmm. leads to us having high quality sessions or visits from those consumers to our platforms. And the higher quality that visit or that session, the more you're going to be able to generate for your advertising, because you know everything is automated, everything is measurable, and everything is dependent upon the quality of the experience as determined by us, which is then assigned a value by the advertiser.
So with the Daily Mash, that was something you acquired, was it?
Yes. Yes. So going back to, we took Digital Bolts onto the market in February last year, onto the AIM market. We went on with a buy and build strategy. So we felt we could quickly scale the business if we took on more cash. So through the transaction, we raised enough cash to acquire the Daily Mash for $1 million. We bought it from its founders, two founders who were previously national newspaper journalists, and I think in 2007 or 2008 launched the Daily Mash. Really very sharp pair of guys who clearly delivered a very successful execution with the Daily Mash. One of them is still involved. Neil is still involved. I think, you know, they felt they'd built the business over 10 years and it was probably time, as sort of owner drivers of a business, to try and realize some value and move on and do something else. So it was a perfect opportunity, really, hopefully for them and certainly for us. So
yeah. Okay.
It worked well.
And you're potentially looking at acquisitions now.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I can't tell you exactly what.
No, of course not. No.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the numbers for the Daily Mash, James. There's some impressive stats in your presentation. So 4 million monthly visits, 3.7 million video views, 6.7 million page views.
That's correct.
Facebook fans, 1 million. That's impressive. I'll need to have a look at the Facebook page, actually. I was looking at the Twitter page earlier on. But no, it's pretty impressive numbers. So it seems quite a scalable business, and I think 500 new followers a day as well. So it's obviously in this environment as well. Everybody's at home, you know, they're looking for something to take their mind off the current situation. And I must admit, I had a good giggle this afternoon. It actually reminded me a bit of Viz. Some of the stories had a feel of Viz to it. It was good.
Yeah. It is, yes. I think there's a real opportunity with the Daily Mash brand. I think, you know, we've grown it a lot in the past year. Well, audience has grown by 12% in the past since we acquired it. But I think as a measure of how popular it is and how much potential it's got, if you look at the last couple of weeks when everyone's been locked in, we've been seeing traffic levels that are near double what we would see in a more regular climate. And I think that tells me then, could it be 2 million followers instead of the 1 million that you mentioned?
Yeah.
I think it's broad enough in its appeal for it to definitely do that. It's a different content experience on the Daily Mash to the one that you would have on Entertainment Daily. In the sense it's shorter, sharper content. but which monetizes at a different rate to the Entertainment Daily journey. But you know, I think its breadth of appeal is significant, and you know, I guess it being on TV is an illustration of that. But you know, I think we can grow the audience and grow the brand's presence.
Is a target audience mainly sort of guys in their 30s, early 40s? Is that the kind of target audience, or is it?
Well, it's a sort of split, male female split. It's about 48% female. You know, it's pretty much 50-50. And yeah, they see, they're more educated professionals that tend to consume it, compared to something like Entertainment Daily, which is a sort of more regular audience of females. So yeah, there's a sort of premium element to it.
Good stuff. And obviously, I've been looking at your share price performance as well over the last couple of months. You've actually done not too badly, considering everything else is getting absolute hammered in the name at the moment. So as you seem to have held up around about that 5-6 pence P a share level pretty well. Market cap's about £5 million. So it looks extremely attractive with obviously the £1 million in the bank.
Well, I do think we're quite good value at the moment. I mean, I would say that, obviously, but I think the when you look at any comparable businesses, I mean, not that there are any directly comparable, but if you think digital media is probably going to have much higher value than specialist print media, as an example, then if we look at our kind of big publisher in Bath, which is where our head office is based, a company called Future PLC, that I'm sure you've heard of. They were running at multiples of 28 times historic EBITDA value. And I think it's probably half that now. But anyway, even if you apply that to, you know, if you apply half that multiple at 14 times historic to our 702,000 EBITDA that we've just released, then you start to look at a market cap of 10 million plus. So I do think 5 million, we're quite heavily undervalued. But, you know, the reality is focus on the business and the business performance, and the market value will sort itself out in time.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah. So what's the roadmap like for 2020 then, James? I know
Who knows?
Yeah, it's a stupid question, isn't it?
No, it's not a stupid question. I think the roadmap was, I'll tell you what the roadmap was, and we decided, we'd eyed a number of acquisitions in the past 6 to 8 months, and we really wanted to make a transformational acquisition, i.e. something that would grab investors' attention in the same way that the Daily Mash has been very popular. You know, if we just step back and think about the Daily Mash, Daily Mash is about 25% of our business, but generates about 75% of the headlines.
Yep.
We looked at some assets that we were looking to buy, similar kind of scales of the Daily Mash, but we just felt they wouldn't really shift the needle if we bought them. You know, they may make a contribution of an extra 200,000 a year or something like that, but it probably wouldn't shift our share price. And without shifting our share price, it makes it more difficult for us to use paper, which at the moment is very difficult because we entered the market with a share price of 14p, then it makes it much more difficult to grow quickly and, you know, leverage paper as part of a transaction. So we'd held off from those smaller acquisitions that we could have made out of cash, and we're really waiting for a bigger target to become available, which we are in discussions with. And we shall see how that unravels over the next couple of months. Clearly, we've stepped back a bit in the last couple of weeks to think, stop, think, assess, see how the ad market is on a day-to-day basis, and try and get a firm idea of where things might go over the next 6 months. So we are acquisitive, and we will continue to look at lots of things. And we've had a really good first quarter this year, which is about 30% ahead of where we thought we would be. You know, there are big, massive challenges right here, right now, as we all know. Yeah. So it hasn't changed our strategy, but it's probably made us a bit more cautious about how we execute. So the buy and build plan will continue. The organic growth in the business, we made another decision this year about, instead of buying last year some of those smaller acquisitions, why don't we put more money into our existing platforms to get more return? So yeah, back to that conversation we were having a moment ago, would the Daily Mash, could the Daily Mash increase significantly in value? Well, yes, it could if we built its audience significantly. Yeah. And, you know, could Entertainment Daily do the same? Entertainment Daily had about 30% audience growth in the past 12 months. So could we grow that again this year? So we decided to invest some money in existing product growth as well this year. So that will continue. But everything, obviously, the backdrop is...
Yeah, it's a bit of wait and see, isn't it? I know it's not a very technical term, but a lot of companies are just in the same boat. But the thing I like, I mean, you've obviously come on the podcast today, like, you can't bury your head in the sand in the markets like this. You've got to still fly the flag and say, you know, the company's still here, I'm still here, you know, we're still trying to operate as normal. That's my opinion. There's no point in burying your head in the sand and just wait until it disappears, because investors are not daft. You know, they remember the companies that were still trying to be proactive, you know, during the troubled times. So,
well, I think we are in a decent place. Clearly we'd all prefer this situation not to have happened. And we would be in a better place if it hadn't happened. And we'd probably possibly have sort of cruised over our target this year. But it will bring opportunity. And I think, you know, to look at it in a positive way, we are seeing massive growth in audience levels, audience consumption of digital media. So so if you look at that quite broadly, then it shouldn't be such a horrible place for us as a business. You know, at least we're not an airline, put it that way.
Yeah, definitely. Just having a quick look at your shareholder list as well, James. Look, the management actually own quite a chunk of the business as well. Is that about 33%? Is that right from my numbers?
It's about 24.5% between myself and Jim Douglas, who's the COO. And Martin Higginson has got 9% as an NED, and then there's smaller percentages for the chairman. But in terms of the executive team, it's about 24% between us.
Yep, that's quite a chunk. Yeah, good stuff. Mark, you anything to add?
Yeah, the one thing we need to do, James, is the director pitch, which we sometimes do on the podcast, which is where we give directors that come on 60 seconds to effectively pitch the business to the market, to the shareholders, and, you know, try to encourage or entice people into why they should be investing in Digital Box. So if you're good to go, I can count you down, and you've got 60 seconds.
Okay. Happy to give it a go. Not prepared, but I'll give it a go.
Yeah, it's the best though when you're not prepared, isn't it? Usually. Okay. Right. Always. So, in 3, 2, 1, take it away.
Okay, if you're looking to invest in a business that has future growth, then you've got to consider operating around the mobile market. Now, we're all aware of massive mobile growth around the globe. I think mobile handsets are probably in over 6 billion hands at the moment. So it is the device of the future. We've modelled our business around that growth. So we're playing into a market that has growth built in. Advertising is playing catch up, which is our core income stream. Consider that the revenues will flow between desktop towards mobile devices, and that disproportionately, again, will grow our business. So even in difficult times, if you're looking for a robust business that is going to be safe during these difficult times and offer considerable growth when things ease up, then Digital Box is a great place to invest.
Great. Perfect.
Was that it? Yeah. Considering you were put in the spot, that was really well done.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see if anyone buys any shares, won't we?
Yeah.
Proof. Or maybe no one will buy any shares anyway.
But sometimes it's not about buying shares in these troubled times. It's about stopping people selling shares, James. I think that's key as well. Because sometimes people are forced to sell shares, and they might have 10 stocks and they might say, you know, I'm getting margin called and something. I need to sell 3 stocks. So you don't want to be one of those 3 stocks that somebody's going to sell. So it's
Yeah, that's true. It's very true, actually. Yeah, you know, if we just hold our share, it remains dormant for 6 months at 6p, that's fine. And you know, and the market comes alive again in 6 months' time. That would be great.
Yep. Yeah. Good stuff. Oh well, I think that's been about nearly 30 minutes at least, Mark. I think it's flew in.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time for coming on, James.
Okay. And, giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, you'll be most welcome. You can come on again anytime. Mark, are you anything else to add?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's not a sector I've looked into invest, James. So you've certainly piqued my interest. So, and we do appreciate you coming on, especially in these times when a lot of companies are going for the nearest rock to hide under. It's good when companies are still trying to engage with investors and reassure that things are going on. So, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, and you. Yep. Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings. Join us next time when we are going to be talking again to another returning guest. We're going to have Malcolm Pally from Coincilium back on the podcast. We had him on not so long ago and we were talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And it should be interesting to have him on now and see what he's got to say about the current situation and what he feels it means for Bitcoin and all the cryptos. Take care and tune in next time.